And welcome back to another week of Talking Taxes with Dan Traxler. Dan is an enrolled agent.
Enrolled agent, that's what I am. I know you always ask that every week. What the heck is an enrolled agent?
Well, I don't know.
I am enrolled to practice before the Internal Revenue Service on your behalf.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Dan's the tax man, but he's not the tax man. Do people call you the tax man at all?
Well, it's kind of funny. They think that I created my last name, Trax, and because my website is traxtax.com. So they think for some reason I made up my last name.
Like your last name maybe is like Traxalonovich or some name.
Well,
like,
and they want to call me Taxler.
Taxler.
Yeah.
Okay.
T-A-X-L-E-R.
We won't call you Taxler. We'll
thank you very much. Just call me the enrolled agent of the gold country.
I got to write that down. I got to remember that. So
maybe all I better trademark it. Huh?
During our last show last week, we were talking about starting businesses, changing business tax types and so forth. And Dan brought up the
A word.
Exactly, the dreaded A word, audit. Have you been involved in an audit, not personally, but with clients?
Both. I've been involved in my own audit back in, I believe it was 2003, and I've been with several clients through their audits. Actually, I normally go without the client because when you take a client to the audit, they say the wrong thing. Mm-hmm. When they're asked a question, they don't understand what the question is. They answer it incorrectly and get me in trouble.
Do they try to trip you up?
Well, not as much as I used to in the old days. In the old days, it was pretty harassing to go to an audit with a client.
Yeah.
But nowadays, I've been doing this for so long, I kind of know the question they're going to ask before they even ask the question.
Sure. All right. Well, let's ask our questions today.
All right.
Okay. Audits, IRS audits. Aren't there a few types of audits, different types of audits?
There's different types of audits. It's interesting. Everybody's afraid of an audit, but only 0.9% of all taxpayers ever get audited. 0.9, that's less than 1%. And there's several different types. There's the field audit. That's where the IRS auditor comes into your radio station and sits down for a few days and goes through everything. Looks at all your income, looks at all your expenses, and decides whether you owe him more money or not. There's also
he would go running screaming out of this place.
Those are the worst kind. There's letter audits where a lot of people have gotten letter audits where the IRS, you get a letter from the IRS that says, by the way, you owe us $380, mm-hmm. or whatever that number is, send the check. And you freak out and say, I don't think I owe you. And you call your local tax preparer who did the return that year, and they say, well, I can help you figure that out. It will cost you $360 to find that out. And you say, well, I'll just pay the $380 and they'll go away. Those are letter audits and sometimes called correspondence audits. Then there's the one that I like the most. It's the most fun. It's called the CP2000 letter audit. And what that is usually about a 12-page form that says that you owe us X amount of dollars. Prove it that you don't. You forgot to report this, 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 and this. And usually it happens with dividends or 1099s that you forgot to report, uh-huh. if you're a sole proprietor, those types of things. Anymore, the IRS, it goes through this determination on how much revenue they can make based upon the audit type they have. They call it return on investment, investment of time. They're kind of like your financial guy, you know?
Sure,
exactly. Like Bill Peterson.
Right. So what's the first thing I should do if I get audited?
Answer the audit. Most people, when they get a letter from the IRS, the first thing they do is they don't open it because they're scared to death. And then the next thing they do when they open it, they'll tend to forget about it. And then they'll call their tax preparer, CPA, enrolled agent, or whoever did the return, or has been helping them currently doing their tax work, and say, I just got this letter. I don't know what it is. And the person will say, well, send it over to me. Let me read it. And when they read it, they find out that they've been sitting on it for 60 days. And it's almost too late to talk to the IRS, and they're almost to the point where they're going to get the dreaded 90-day letter, certified 90-day letter. So,
and what is that, the certified?
Well, it says if you don't respond to this one, we're going to assess the tax.
We're
going to lien your asset. We're going to take your firstborn and take your car. And they don't do any of that stuff, but that's how they threaten.
So, again, what are my chances of getting audited?
0.9%. if you're the typical taxpayer. There are certain audits that will get done based upon levels of income. The IRS has, they have what's called a DIF score, D-I-F, and it's actually a secret computerized process that looks at everyone's tax return and decides if they need to be audited. No one knows what it is. It's no one other than the programmers, and they are a pledge to silence, and none of us know exactly how that DIF score is done. You get tidbits of it every once in a while, but it's this secret thing that the IRS does.
Are you serious?
Oh, they're very deadly serious.
It's a secret thing?
It's a secret thing. It's very secret.
Well, what can I do to keep from being audited? I guess that's the big question.
The first thing is you need to report all your income, you need to report all your expenses, and you need to do them accurately. If you do that, even if you get audited, you won't have any problem because you haven't done nothing wrong. You know, you're able to sleep at night knowing that you've done everything exactly the way it should be done. Whether you do your tax return yourself or whether you go to on a professional to have it done, as long as it's done accurately, it shouldn't have any problem. Some of the things that the IRS really looks at are high charitable contributions. That's one thing they look at, and it, part of the DIF score has to do with that. If you have one year where you have a huge amount of charitable contributions, when I say huge, I mean anything over, say, $5,000 or more, you've given away a car to charity. That car, of course, if that car is over $5,000, it has to be appraised anyway, and then you have to be able to show that it really had a fair market value of $5,000 or more. The other area are large medical expenses. And the biggest area for most small employers or employees have is this thing called an employee business expense, EBE. Everything has an acronym, employee business expense. As an employee, if your employer says that you pay for your own expenses, you pay for your own gas in your car when you go out and calls, you buy your own lunches, sure, you buy your own pens, pencils, those types of things, those are employee business expenses. The IRS audits those quite readily because most of them are not able to be deducted, simply because the employer doesn't have what's called a reimbursement plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Now, I've also heard that if you have an office in your home, that you'll get audited. Is that true?
No, it's not true. Office and home, it can be auditable, but if you consistently have an occupation, a business where it is, the IRS recognizes those types of businesses are actually done out of a home. Every sole proprietor, when they do their Schedule C inside their tax return, has a business code, and that code is related. You pick that code based upon what your business is, and if the IRS matches that code with an activity like it, you would have an office and home, in most cases a person would, then they won't bother you. The only problem with it is when you go to sell the house, there's going to be some capital gains issues, even if you sell the house for a loss.
So who can have a home office, Dan? Can anybody have one?
Well, yeah, anybody can have one based upon their business.
I mean, what is a home office? Could a housewife, a stay-at-home mom, have a home office? This is where I go at night to do my house, you know, my financial house work.
Yeah, except that she doesn't have a business that earns an income.
So it has to be a business that earns an income.
Correct, because you can't take an home office expense against.
Let's say a Mary Kay lady, sure, a Tupperware salesman,
yep,
someone like that.
Right.
Can they have a home office?
Absolutely, absolutely. A Mary Kay Cookie Lee, one of my favorites. My wife has one of those, and she has is going to set up her own home office in her home. She's had an office in her home before. I've had an office in my home where I worked out of my home years ago.
Could I have a home office? Or is my office here?
Your office is here because your employer, which is your corporation, doesn't require you to have an office in the home.
Oh, okay.
They'd have to have a requirement to have your office in the home, and it'd have to be your regular place of business, where your regular place of business is really sitting behind that radio doing what you do on a daily basis, and you do it wonderfully.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
You. Now, is that, you know, that home office, are there some guidelines that you suggest to people?
Right. The office actually has to be a home office. It has to be a designated spot. It just can't be your breakfast table.
Right.
It can be a corner in a bedroom that has a little desk and a computer. But the square footage is based upon what that corner exists. It can't be the bed.
Well, let me ask you this. So I have a, let's say my partner and I have a business. We're a partnership.
Sure.
Okay. I have an office in my house. He has an office in his house. Is that legal?
It would be legal, yes. Actually, in that case, what would probably happen is that the partnership would probably reimburse you or pay for your office space for the rent of that space by the partnership.
And what about a corporation? Let's say we're a corporation. Can you have a office in your home and still be a corporation, but have a location of a business?
Well, if you actually have a business location, then in order to have an office and a home for a particular employee, there have to be a requirement by the corporation that the employee
has
an office. Now, that would work like, let's say, a for example, a food sales company that had salesmen out in wherever, and they all worked out of their house. Well, their home office wasn't the corporate headquarters. Their office was their home. That's where they worked out of.
So let me ask you a question again about the, we talked about this last time, the S-corporation, self-employment. I've heard people say that you should not be self-employed, but an S-corporation, and you won't get audited. Is that true?
No, it's not true. Most self-employed who make a gross income of less than $150,000 gross before expenses won't even get looked at by the IRS. S corporations are getting looked at more and more because more people are going from sole proprietorships to S corporations. The problem that has happened is that the IRS just doesn't have the personnel, and they don't get the training of their personnel high enough so that they can audit S corporations and C corporations, the small ones, because there's a lot of them. What's going to happen in the future is that they're going to be hiring more employees to be able to audit those types of entities and get them trained faster on S corporations and C corporations. So with only 0.9% of any type of tax return getting audited, it's the chances of you getting audited are very little. And if you do everything correctly, what does it matter?
Okay, Dan, so I've been told before that if you file after April 15th on an extension, that the chances of getting audited are very, very slim.
Well, you see, you can go to Snoops on that one online, that one that figures out the old urban legends. That's an urban legend. It really doesn't matter. It depends upon when that return comes in, and each return is looked at using this DIF score. The secret DIF score. And if it is in the parameters where it should be looked at, then it will be looked at, whether it's filed on April 15th or on September 15th. It really doesn't make a difference.
All right. We've run out of time. We've been talking taxes today with Dan Traxler, enrolled agent. Dan, if someone wants to get a hold of you and find out more about today's topic or talk taxes with you, how do they do that?
623 New York Ranch Road in Jackson, and 257-0270, 781-6201, or Dan at TraxTax.com.
That is Trax Tax.
That's me.
All right. Dan Traxler, thanks for being with us today.
You're welcome.
All right.